It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the Bitching Hour.
Hey everybody. On this episode, we are continuing our body series, and we decided to talk about catcalling and street harassment. We want to give a heads up and include a warning that in this episode, we will be discussing street harassment, especially as it relates to queerness, sexuality, and gender. We want our listeners to take care of themselves, but we also feel that engaging with topics like this can facilitate meaningful conversation, particularly among survivors and those affected. We acknowledge and respect the communal work of deciding when to participate in or engage with discussions such as these. Hi everyone, I'm Maggie. I was a tour guide at Mount Holyoke, and now I actively have to try not to walk backwards everywhere I go.
You're a bitch. I know, it just happens, it just takes over.
Can't stop it.
I'm just gonna keep it simple. Hey everybody, I'm Mia, and I've had sex over 100 times.
That was amazing.
We should do this every week.
We should do this every week.
I love identity theft. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Okay. So we're starting off the episode with a mini game. 5 things that you'd sing at my seance to get the spooky party started. Then we'll begin our main brew discussing catcalling and street harassment. Finally, we are ending today's episode, giving an update on what we're reading. We know our summer reading lists aren't quite finished yet. But we know you gays, I mean guys, love reading, nerds.
So you all may remember that we have done a mini game before titled 5 Things You Would Put in a Pentagram to Summon Me. Mm-hmm. So we thought we'd up the ante now and do part 2, which is 5 songs that you would sing or otherwise play at a seance to summon my spirit. So we have done them for each other, and we're going to see how accurate they are.
Yeah. Do you want me to go first?
I do want you to go first.
Okay, so songs that I would use to summon Maggie during a seance, which, by the way, I would never participate in.
You wouldn't participate in a seance?
Mm-mm.
Why?
I went to Catholic school. I'm terrified of that shit.
We're going on. Mm-mm. I love a good Ouija board.
I've never used a Ouija board.
That's fucked up, dude.
Here we go. Songs for Maggie. Number 1, RuPaul, CoverGirl.
You're not wrong.
Number 2, the soundtrack to The Fosters. Or not the soundtrack, the intro song to The Fosters.
Uh-huh.
Number 3, Cher. But here's the thing. I meant to write, what's the name of that song? I meant to write Do You Believe in Life After Love. Was that what it's called?
Believe, I think it's
called. So, okay. So I meant to write Cher, Believe, but I wrote Cher Time After Time. So I guess I'm hoping that there's a recording somewhere of Cher covering Time After Time.
That would probably work too, frankly.
The Con by Tegan and Sarah.
Oh.
And finally, that one band that you love. You saw them, I've literally never heard their music. You saw them once at Pearl Street, I think. They have like Silver in the name or something about a river. It's like a 3-word name. There's like several members of the band, some of whom are women.
Lake Street Dive?
Yeah, that's the one,
Silver River at Pearl Street. I love that band.
Something about that band. That brilliant.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I also love that you use the Fosters because it's like, is it my favorite song? No, but would it get me? Like, would it be like, would my spirit be like,
oh, wait, there's a new episode?
Oh.
I'm coming back to Earth for a second.
I'll do it. And Lake Street Dive, that's totally true. Especially if it's one of their old shit. Dude, they're like classic Western Mass.
I know, I feel like I should have heard them at some point, but
they're okay. They really went downhill. Don't tell them.
Uh-uh.
Are you ready?
Yeah, what would you use to summon me?
So I'm gonna get you started. I'm gonna get that spirit tingling with For the Night by Princess Nokia.
Ooh!
It's
a banger.
Then we're gonna just do another like more recent hit, Till It's Over by Anderson .Paak.
Oh.
You've heard some, you're getting in for more.
I love that song.
Then we're gonna really kick it with a Mia classic. I've actually decided to merge these two songs, so we're gonna do a little medley, like in a musical, of Hold On, We're Going Home by Drake, and then Know Yourself by Drake.
Oh, yes.
And then Forrest Gump by Frank Ocean. And we are going to really seal the deal with Wide Open Spaces by the Dixie Chicks. Oh my God.
That's just a playlist I've already made. Did you just steal that from my Spotify?
Yeah.
Might as well have.
Well curated.
Seriously. We should make Spotify playlists of these songs. Listen now to Summon Me to Your Sam.
Gonna get sad what? In here. Yeah, so our main brew this week is about street harassment and catcalling and basically just like public displays of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And how we respond to them, how we feel about them. And we know that this is obviously something that like pretty much every feminist and or queer thing discusses. Mm-hmm. This is a pretty big deal, but you know, right. We thought we wanted to as well. I think we have some takes from you guys that we wanted to share that you all put in our DMs, and then some of our own experiences.
Yeah, so. And I think that it's important to include this in the body series because we've been talking a lot about how we feel about our bodies and personal identification and experience of living in our bodies, and I think this is a very pertinent thing that goes along with the ways that we present ourselves, the ways we feel about our bodies, and the ways that we exist out in the world, and also because it's summer.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a lot about showing more skin and how that can be uncomfortable or more comfortable for people in the last episode about dressing in summer. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is a relevant topic because people are out and about more in the summer and people are showing more skin in the summer. And that makes people think they have a license to make comments more regularly, I think.
For sure. For sure. And I think also I want to acknowledge the validity of, you know, I definitely can see a bunch of those videos going around that's all about, like, you know, this woman put a camera on herself and recorded street harassment all day. And, you know, they're interesting. And then you go like, oh, I've seen so many of those. And then it's like, then you're like, wait a second. Like, everybody else's street harassment is valid. And you know when, like, every, like, fifth time or so that you get catcalled, you go like, whoa, that, like, really, like, fucked me up for a day. Or, like, you know, like, sometimes they just, like, kind of hit harder than others. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think... I don't know. I don't want to brush it off as like, oh man, like that's just everything feminists complain about, when it's like, no, this is actually like pretty violent.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'd like to give it the attention it deserves.
Yeah. And we wanted to basically talk about our experiences, share some things that you guys have been willing to share with us. We want to talk about, you know, safety and how it relates to queerness and sexuality and gender identity and expression. But we also want to talk about some ways to cope with it, some things that we find useful.
Or even funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of mine are funny.
Yeah.
Plot twist. Who's surprised? But yeah, so this one is going to be, it's going to be maybe a little bit of a heavy episode, but I think it's going to be funny and relatable and yeah.
Let's get to it.
Let's do it. Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is, do you remember, Maggie, do you remember the first time that you were catcalled?
I read this on our Google Doc and I was thinking about it, and my first reaction was like, no, I don't remember the first time I was catcalled. Like, that happens all the time. And then,
I was three.
But then I was like, no, actually, I think I do remember two particularly young ones that, like, I don't know if I remember anything before that.
Mm-hmm.
One of which was when I was at a farmer's market with my mom, and I was wearing a dress that had, like, it had sleeves and, like, a higher front. It just had, like, kind of a lower back. Like, it probably hit, like, my mid-back. And, like, a man came up behind me and put his, like, an older man, like, put his hand on the part of my back that was exposed. And he goes, like, this is a really great dress on you. And I was, like, probably, like, 11 or so. And I remember I talked to my mom about it afterwards. And I was, like, I think he was trying to be nice. But I was so upset. And she was, like, you're allowed to be upset by things like that. And, like, I wish I could tell you that this was, you know, not going to happen all the time. But, like, it probably is. So, like...
I think that's a really interesting first place to start, because what's so striking about that is that icky feeling of, I know this is a thing that is maybe trying to be nice, because I think that's the thing. A lot of the compliments that I receive that I consider to be street harassment or just people bothering me or catcalling are things that are maybe innocuous from someone that I'm close to, or from someone that I know, or from someone that I'm having a flirtatious or romantic or sexual interaction with.
Right.
Things like, you have a beautiful smile, you have beautiful eyes, you look nice today.
Those are all things. If you did that to me, I'd be like, oh, Mimi.
Right. Like, just, they're flat, they're compliments. Right. And that's always the defense. It's like, I was just trying to compliment you, bitch.
Right.
You know, when you react negatively. And I think that that is something that, as young girls, makes it such a confusing experience the first time you expect, I mean, many times after that too, but it's, that's what makes it so hard to process, I think, for a lot of people is, mm-hmm. is that you feel weird about feeling weird about it.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I'm also raised in a society that tells me that being pretty is really important.
Right.
So I should be grateful to receive this kind of attention, mm-hmm. but something about it doesn't sit right with you. Because it's harassment.
100%. I think, like, one of the things that Cameron Esposito talks about in her special Rape Jokes, which I mm-hmm. highly recommend that you listen to, it's free on her website, is she talks about, she, like myself, and I know, like, many other queer women and queer non-binary people, didn't come into queerness until a little bit later, so, like, late teenagerhood, young adulthood, and had slept with men before, like had slept with cis men in like straight relationships, quote unquote, before then. And she talked about that feeling of like dressing the way she wanted to and like specifically like making herself an active part of a lesbian community and like wanting to live and love that way and still feeling this like weird pull of like my value as a person who is like assigned female at birth is being fuckable. Like my, that is like what, like that is my ultimate value. And so I am actively choosing to take myself out of that game.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definitely how I feel about street harassment is that it's like, even in all of the ways that it is like some of the most painful things, I do remember thinking like, okay, but like, at least I'm like, it's of value or it's like, it says something about my place in this society. It says something about my social capital,
mm-hmm.
which is like obviously really different for women and across a lot of different identities. Like street harassment is like a really obvious example of how intersectionality plays out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And though, and I think that I'm sure we'll talk about that more, but the ways that plays into not just how we experience it, but safety
mm-hmm.
is such a big topic there.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time you were catcalled?
I don't know that I don't know that this was the first time, but I remember a time that really stuck out where I was alone and it happened. Mm. So I developed really young. I had like breasts by the time I was like 9.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 5.5 feet tall by the time I was like in 6th grade. Like mm-hmm. I just developed pretty young. So I looked a lot older
mm-hmm.
and I remember I was walking, there was a convenience store like 2 blocks from my mom's house and I used to go there all the time, just like get Snickers or candy or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, house
stuff. Like a 9-year-old.
A 9-year-old does. And I think I was definitely 11 because I was wearing these shorts that I had in 5th grade and I loved them so much. So I was 11, it was the summer before 6th grade and I was walking to this convenience store and a guy pulled, like was driving up and he was like stopped. He was like at the light stopped and he started yelling to me. He was just like, hey, how's it going?
Ugh.
And I was like, oh, hi. And he asked me to get in his car and like go with him to, he was like, I'm going to a party, like a pool party. Do you want to come? And it's what's really interesting to me was that was like a moment where I recognized that I was crossing a threshold from like pedophiles to just like men who are, you know, because right. It was the scenario of like, don't get into a stranger's car. Like when a guy, you know what I mean? Like
right.
you're a kid who can be abducted.
Right.
Watch out for men trying to like steal you. And it was like, right. this is not that. This is that same scenario. But because I look like a grown woman, he's trying to just like pick me up.
Right.
You know? And I was like terrified because I still had that like, oh my God, there's like a stranger who's trying to, but it was, he literally was just like hitting on me.
Also, like, let's be real clear that there's no way that even if you looked significantly older mm-hmm. than you were, that you
looked old enough
to hang out with
someone
up.
Who's driving.
Yeah, that's no.
And
no.
I said, I'm 11. And he, like, cut around cars and, like, sped off. Like,
wow.
Fucking fled.
I'm really glad, frankly, that that was the response.
Yeah.
It's like a really
it could have
small...
been. It could have been worse. But I remember feeling that feeling of like, oh, I'm hot shit, but this doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And it being really confusing. And I was really angry for a lot of middle school and high school about my body. I was really angry about developing young and the attention that it brought me. Like, I was very uncomfortable. And I think that's like, I love my body, but I think I was really uncomfortable with my body for a long time and thought that it was because of me, but it was because of how uncomfortable I was with receiving unwanted sexual attention.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've gotten gayer through the years, that unwanted sexual attention was from men in particular.
Right. Right. And for me, I think one of the underlying themes, and maybe this will kind of speak to you or maybe not, but I feel like punishment is something that I have always kind of had in the back of my head and how I think of being street harassed. Like another one that happened when I was really, really young is we were at the beach. We were in North Carolina. I might have been 10 or 11. And I was with my sister who, actually, I was probably like 8 or 9 and she was 18 or 19. And we were like 100 or 200 yards in front of my parents walking down the street. So we didn't look like we were together. And a car full of boys passed by and screamed about like, why don't you like suck my fucking dick? And my dad was horrified. He was like, does this happen to you? And my sister was like, yes, this literally happens to me all the time. And I was like, no, this doesn't happen to me. I'm 8. I don't like...
I'm a child.
And for me, it's like, it's that feeling of being punished just for like living, like just for like having the audacity to like walk outside and like go about your business. And I think so much of street harassment like will come in those moments where it's almost like you're being punished for feeling joy. Like one of the things I talked to my sister about this topic and how we were going to do this earlier today. And she shared with me that some of like the most horrible catcalling has happened when she's like out with a friend and she's like, oh, I got this new skirt. I'm like, let me twirl and show it to you. And like, that's when a man like screamed something really violent out of his car. And she's like, oh my, like, you know, it's that feeling of being like, I'm being punished for
living. And it's intrusive.
Exactly.
It's a violent intrusion into your moment of like, just peaceful, like careless.
Right.
Existing.
Like, not thinking about like not having your guard up.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you feel like catcalling changed when you came out?
I think that as I, like, when I came out, I mean, I only very recently have moved away from wanting to date cis men. So I've identified as queer for years now and bisexual before that and not straight as a hyphenated term that I liked to use a lot. And so I think it's still kind of changing for me because when I was dating, when I was still interested in dating cis men, it still was a complicated thing for me. And I think it's become less complicated.
Yeah.
The older that I get, I think maybe this would happen whether I was kind of coming more to terms with my sexuality and interest in pursuing queer relationships exclusively or not. I think just like growing older, there's no gray area about it to me.
Right.
It's just fucked up.
Right.
And it just pisses me off and makes me upset. You know, I think when I was younger, not that I ever enjoyed it, but that I felt like, should I be validated by this?
And what like a fucked up byproduct of this system that like you worry as a teenager and a young adult that, you know, you're looking back at yourself and going, well, I hope I didn't like enjoy that. Like that would be fucked up. Or like, should I be enjoying this? That like, those are the byproducts of this system is that like people who are victims of street harassment go like, did I deserve this? Or like, should I like this? Or like, is this just a compliment or?
Yeah. So I think that that's been the biggest change is that it's just like, nope, this is what this is, you know? And I think also that I think anger is a difficult emotion for me personally to experience, but I think it's a difficult emotion for women to experience because it's ignored. Or for many women of different identities, particularly women of color and Black women, it's
punished.
It's punished and it's exaggerated and it's not taken seriously in a way that's dismissive, but also exploitative.
And like highly stereotyped.
Yeah. And so, like, I think I also struggled with getting angry, like, allowing myself to be angry about something like that. I think part of it, too, is that it's routine.
Yeah.
So, you're like, well, do I have the energy to be angry about this? Am I allowed to be angry about something that's just reality? Because, you know, if this is the way that it is, then it is the way, this is the status quo. It's normal, you know? But coming to terms with, like, nope, this is fucked up.
I remember like the first time as a little kid that I felt that feeling, like the weirdly, like the only thing I can make an analogy to is like, imagine that you're like doing a surprise party for someone or you like got them a gift and you like see that they found your hiding spot and are going to look at it and you're just like, stop looking at it. And they keep hunting through your shit and you're like, no, you're ruining the surprise. That feeling of being like, I am so powerless to stop something and you're just like, please stop it. Like, please leave me alone. Please give me even 5 seconds to regroup so that I can have any sense of control over this situation. Mm-hmm. Like, that to me is what it feels like to be harassed. And it is so, it's something that has, like, I'm so happy to have identified that feeling as opposed to just feeling like, why do I feel like I want to vomit sometimes? Mm-hmm. Or like, why do I feel like terrible and I don't know why? But it also is so, it's so disappointing because you know it's coming, mm-hmm. you know, like, and you know, like, it's hard to not get down on yourself. Like, ugh, like, we get harassed all the time. Like, why am I upset about this one? Or why is this one bothering me? Or like, you know, damn.
This is a fun topic. So Maggie, how has your response, your experience, your reaction to catcalling changed?
Well, the kind of catcalling that I get has changed a lot. I mean, I wouldn't even call it catcalling anymore. Like, I used mm-hmm. to get, like, kind of, like, classic catcalling when I was in high school. Like, I've been grabbed by men outside of bars that I walked by. I, like, you know, like walking with a boyfriend and having a guy yell out of a car, you know, like dump him and get in the car, like, come suck right. my dick.
Like kissy noises and, like, yeah. whistling and, like, that kind of.
Exactly. Which is
so. The traditional brand, if you will.
The traditional brand.
Original flavor.
Big league joke. It's like, which is so violent, but as we were just saying, like, we're not really trained to see as violent. Like, so much of it is trained to be like, you know, that's a compliment, or it could be a compliment, mm-hmm. or sometimes it's a compliment. And so, but the kind of harassment that I've gotten, it wasn't so much after I came out, but it was after I, like, started presenting a lot more butch, and particularly when I was, like, I went through, like, a real hard butch year where I was, like, fucking doing the thing, and it's just so much more outwardly, it's not more outwardly violent. It's just not particularly sexually violent. Mm-hmm. It's, like, it's sexually violent in that, like, there is a huge sexual power imbalance, and, like, those right. dynamics are there, but it's not sexual, like, oh, I'm going to do X, Y, Z to you. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, what the fuck are you, you freak? Right. Or, like, you
it's,
know.
Like, not sexual, but it's, or it's not about sex, but it's still sexual.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, I mean, like, with that, my response to it has changed a lot because, like, I think, I don't know if this is internalized or not, but, like, I was a lot more confident in just being, like, I'm just going to brush this off mm-hmm. when it was, like, more of that quote-unquote traditional brand. And it kind of depended on what it was. Like, there were times when I felt like I could more easily be like, go fuck yourself, or I could not say anything, or I would be like, okay, I'm actually going to, like, walk away pretty quickly. I'm by myself and it's the middle of the night. But now, 9 times out of 10, I just, like, do whatever humanly possible I can to get out of the situation because, like, it's never going to go well for me. Like, there is no way to respond to someone saying, like, you fucking right. freak, what are you? Or, like, mm-hmm. you know.
I think something that's important to consider here, too, is the way that I think an argument that people often use when men do things, like, that are violent and sexually based to women is to use the argument about this could be your daughter, this could be
ugh,
whatever, which
yeah.
I think is just, it's a shitty argument because people deserve to be treated with dignity and respect because they're people, not because they belong to men.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that it is often a compelling argument. Like, often ownership of the women that are important to them is the only thing that can get a guy to, like, fucking check himself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's important here to note that, like, that argument wouldn't
work
for you right. in that scenario when it's about gender or about presentation or about sexuality.
Right.
Because traditional forms of femininity are what those men want to protect in those women that they care about.
Right. Like, I'm not seen as a daughter. Someone does not look at me and instantly go, wow, you could be someone's daughter, even though I totally am.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise.
But two people's daughter.
Two people's daughter. But no, I mean, I think that's right on. And I know that it changes depending on the context too. Mm-hmm. Like, when I'm by myself, like, a lot of the times I will be read as, like, a kind of, like, a slight man or, like, a shorter man, which, like, has a different implication for, like, men who are kind of quote unquote, like, physically defending their territory than when, like, when Nancy and I are together, we get read as gender confused, but like dykes,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, much more of, like, if someone's going to, like, call us dykes while we walk down the street, like, it's when I'm with her.
Right.
You know, like, that's. Right.
And I also do want to say that men also receive straight harassment.
Oh, absurd amounts of straight harassment. You know,
like, this is something that, like, is so relatable. And I think that's why so many,
mm-hmm.
so many feminist pieces of art and literature and media talk about this.
Mm-hmm. And how, like, I think it's such a relatable experience. Like, I don't know any other, like, I know so many other, excuse me, I know so many other, like, masculine and androgynous people who, like, still in some way identify as women or kind of, like, aligned with womanhood who have been called the gay F word, myself included, in an mm-hmm. angry way, like, on the street. And it was interesting, like, one of our listeners, like, wrote in and talked about, like, oh, I get called the gay F word, like, on a regular basis. Like, he's a guy, and he's like, I get called that every day, and I'm starting to just brush it off because I'm like, LOL, where's the lie? Like, are you wrong? Which is just, it's definitely funny. But I think also, like, it's not, so much of the conversation is dominated by, like, you know, telling women to smile, and mm-hmm. which is so important. It definitely is. But I think, like, we punish femininity, particularly in people who are supposed to be men, in such an aggressive
right.
way.
Right.
So how do you feel about, like, how do you deal with catcalling? Like, what's your response?
Well.
Or, like, how do you feel about dealing yeah. with catcalling?
So I think that for me, I grew up in a trash-filled and small, but still a city. Mm-hmm. So catcalling has been something I dealt with for a very long time. One time Elise and I were walking, we got catcalled by somebody who was driving a sedan that was a delivery car for Burger King. And Elise yelled, "Chicken fries are back!" So that was a successful rebuttal. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, now that I've gotten older, I don't have time for that shit.
Yeah.
Like, I literally don't have time for it. And I've been lucky that, I mean, I, like, live in a place with so many people now, mm-hmm. there's usually people around. So I'm lucky to be in, like, experiences where, like, I'm usually waiting for the train, and the train's going to come, and there's other people around. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I'm walking somewhere, and people aren't going to follow me because I'm walking with a crowd. Like, right. you know, I'm pretty lucky in those situations thus far to feel kind of safe to just ignore it. Because sometimes ignoring it can make it escalate as well. Mm-hmm. And I think my response is always to just try and de-escalate a situation.
Yes, I agree.
And interestingly, it's not something that I think about a lot.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, well, whatever, fuck this. You know, yeah. like, because I don't have the emotional energy to be upset about every time someone says some shit to me.
Yes.
Although I recently got catcalled from a UPS truck from the driver. Jesus and I was Christ. And that really bothers me more than just some fucking schmuck on the street. Mm-hmm. Like, when someone catcalls me from their, because it's the audacity, like, they know nothing's going to happen to them.
Right.
And I find that to, that actually really upsets me most recently. That's been something that bothers me. But I find that when I'm with other queer looking people, or if I'm with someone that I'm dating, that it comes up a lot more.
Mm-hmm. You feel like you get harassed in general more? You feel mm-hmm. like it becomes more, like, queer in nature?
I actually don't feel like it becomes more queer in nature. I feel like it becomes more about trying to suss out whether I'm actually with the person that I'm with, mm-hmm. whether I'm dating them, or whether, like, I think it becomes, like, a weird power thing, power struggle with the person that I'm with, and I'm the conduit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not that, like, when I'm with someone that they don't also receive catcalling, but most recently, like, the past, like, week, I've noticed a lot of, like, people trying to hit on me mm-hmm. in front of people to, like, to be like, oh, are you gay? Like,
are you really gay? Or,
yeah.
Like, turning you type shit.
Right. Yeah. That kind of shit. And I have had people, like, violently yell things about
yeah
turning me or whatever when I look gay, when my yeah. gay is showing.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I feel like it often is, like, an appeal to my compulsory mm-hmm. heterosexuality, like, come back to our side. You, this violence will surely win you back. And I'm like, that's really, I don't know about that.
How do you de-escalate? Like, if you're going to de-escalate something kind of quickly, like, what is your go-to?
I usually, often I will roll my eyes at men, which is maybe not actually a de-escalation. but it usually, like, I just, like, keep going. Mm-hmm. And I'll maybe roll my eyes and be like, this is me telling you to fuck off and, like, don't persist.
Right.
But I'm just leaving.
Nevertheless, he persisted.
You know, he really did. I usually will just try to remove myself from the situation. There yeah. was one time when a guy was, I had given a guy, like, money or some food that, like, food that I was carrying or something. Mm-hmm. He had asked for it. And I was waiting for the bus, and he, like, stuck around and was chatting with me, and he was, like, fine. And then another group of people came up who seemed to be, like, pretty intoxicated and started talking with him. And he was yelling at them to leave him alone. And he was like, I don't know them. And I was like, oh, okay, like, whatever. And I had my headphones in, but I wasn't playing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I heard him say to one of the dudes, "Leave me alone, can't you see I'm working on something?" This man was, like, 70 years old.
But it's so true to hear, like, whoa, like, that's why we were chatting?
Right,
like, that's
I thought why we I was talked just about having the weather. A nice, like, yeah. And so the thing is, I was really scared, and I was really new to the area. I think it was a couple of months after I lived here, and I just didn't think about it. And someone afterwards was like, "Dude, walk to the next bus stop. Why didn't you leave?" And I was like, oh, my God, I didn't even think to do that. Like, I have a phone. Yeah. I know that the next bus stop is on that street.
Right.
You know, I was on, like, Mass Ave or something. Like, just walk to the next bus stop. And I really, like, afterwards, I was like, oh, my God, I should have. But I waited at this bus stop, and I was so scared and so uncomfortable. I ended up calling my girlfriend at the time and just, like, talking to her and just being like, so you know where I am. So you know what's happening right now. Can we just, like, talk on the phone? And he started to try and talk to me again. I was like, sorry, like, I'm on the phone, whatever, and sat on the bus. But I sat on the bus, and he got on, too, and just, like, stared at me.
Yeah.
And I, like, snuck off. Yeah. At, like, a different stop or something. And I don't, that's the ultimate thing, is that I don't think this guy was going to follow me home. I don't think this guy was imposing, like, immediate, urgent violence against me. But it made me, it was a power struggle, and it was so uncomfortable. And to hear him, like, articulate these, like, sinister intentions to somebody else within earshot because he thought that I couldn't hear him because I had my headphones on.
Yeah.
Like, was so unnerving. So now that is something that I do, is to just, like, move away from a situation. I will get off of the train and get onto a different car.
Right.
Things like that.
Well, it works in a city too because there's more businesses. It's more well lit. It's open later. So one time Nancy and I were on our way down to New York, and it was like the middle of the night, and we stopped at Taco Bell to eat. It was like 9 p.m. or something. Not the middle of the night. And we stopped in, like, I don't even remember where in Connecticut, but it was really empty, and like the lights in the parking lot weren't working very well. We knew we weren't going to see anything again for a while. So we just, like, we pulled over and we get out of the car and we walk in together and we open the door to the Taco Bell and the little bell goes. It was like completely silent. Like it had like been, people had been talking. It was like at a full thing. The entire thing got completely quiet, like almost entirely men. Like I would say like probably 90% of the restaurant was men, including the people working there. And we walked in like, oh, fuck, enough to a point that, like, we couldn't even look at each other and be like, whoa, fuck, like, what did we do? And we're, like, waiting to order, and this guy comes over to Nancy and apparently, like, whispers, or he talks so quietly, he goes, like, I need to talk to you outside. And I look over, and she's gone.
No.
I'm like, cool, like, this is the one. Like, this is it. Like, this is gonna be the one where, like, I can't find her, and I'm alone in Connecticut at a rest stop, like, trying to find my partner. And we came outside, and the guy was, like, yelling at Nancy about there was a scratch on his car that, like, Nancy opened her door and showed, like, she could not have possibly given to his car by opening the door. And he was like, no, it was you. It was, like, a foot away from where her door was.
Oh, God.
And I, like, and she came back in, and I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God. But that
get
idea
get these crunch wraps and get the fuck out of here.
Bye. But the idea of the threat, like, yes, neither of us died. That was, like, obviously a more dramatic example, but, like, you know, we could look back on that and be, like, we should have been, like, more chill. Like, this guy was just, like, frustrated about his car. But, no, that's, like, a pretty valid thing to be
worried about.
Everything that you see and understand has taught you to
has
think
has led you to that.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
It's terrifying.
I will say one of my de-escalation tactics is talking like a kindergarten teacher, which kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I didn't really know when it started happening, but, like, for me, de-escalating meant, like, being... Because it used to be, like, kind of going along with stuff. Like, when I was, like, a little bit more sexual in nature, like, it was about, like, laughing and giggling and being like, haha, that's so funny, and then just hoping that I could leave. But now it turns into, like, there was a guy who, like, blocked my path on the airplane. He, like, tried to, like, follow me onto the airplane in the beginning. He's like, where are you going? What's up? Like, where are you going? I'm like, we're on the same flight. Relax. You know, right. I'm here.
You know, like, my destination.
He stood in front of me in the aisle when I tried to come back from the bathroom and, like, put his hands on both the seats and was like, what are you doing in Arizona? Where are you going in Arizona? Where do you live in Boston? And I was like, can you move? Like, I eventually, like, ducked under him. And when I got off the airplane, I was waiting for a coworker, and he came up to me, he, like, found me, and I was on my headphones, and I was like, oh, sorry, I'm, like, listening to something. And he goes, it was so nice to talk to you. And, like, so I take my headphone out because he's, like, screaming at me. And he puts his hand on my shoulder and gets completely in my ear and talks full volume. And he goes, are you a transgender? And I was like, oh. And I was like, my brain was like, what? My, like, kindergarten teacher took over, and I went, like, that's really none of your business. Thank you for asking, though. Have a good rest of your day. And I just, like, started to play on my phone. Oh, I don't know what, God. Thank you for asking probably wasn't the the best thing because I don't want it to imply that that was a nice question.
Right.
But
I think that saying none of your business beforehand makes it obvious that you're not really sincerely thanking him.
That's absolutely none of your fucking business.
That's amazing.
Also, people were listening. He literally screamed, "Are you a transgender?" in the middle of the Phoenix airport.
Meanwhile, people are like, "Oh, I can't use their pronouns. Grammar's incorrect." Okay, buddy. Okay. Oh my fucking God. These bitches.
It's a mess out there.
Yeah, and I think it's important to, when we're talking about de-escalating situations, I mean, what's also frustrating is that sometimes I want to fucking escalate the situation. So we posted on our story asking people to write into us talking about their catcalling experiences or ways that they've dealt with it or deal with it. Mm-hmm. And two that stuck out to me is one talked about a guy saying an inappropriate comment about her body when she was just going to a CVS.
Mm-hmm.
And another had a guy at a stoplight catcall her from his car. And in both scenarios, the followers that we're talking about like spoke out against the men catcalling them. And in one, in the car scenario, the person, she actually spat on him.
Mm-hmm.
So in the CVS example, the person yelled at the guy and explained to him, like, your masculinity is really fragile, but that's not an appropriate excuse to make these kinds of comments to strangers about their body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to talk about how sometimes when I hear stories about people doing this, I'm like, fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's so awesome. That's so empowering because it's exactly what I want to do.
Right.
When I get angry and I want to just like fucking scream at these people, which also I have done as a tactic.
Really?
When a dude's talked to me, so I've done it before. Usually when I'm drunk, I will just shriek.
Oh, that's funny.
Like a
though.
Banshee. Just like, and they really leave you alone.
Yeah. I bet.
Yeah. It works. Or like sometimes just like a yelp. Sometimes that gets them too. They're just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I will talk more about my actual methods.
Yeah.
Because I have many and they're excellent. and my ideology behind them, which is very different than these two examples that I'm talking about. Because for me, the fear of making that situation escalate is so much bigger than the payoff ever of doing something like that. And so, like, obviously people are going to do what they want to do, but I think it's important to talk about what's productive, what's not productive.
Mm.
Because I think that the kinds of people who are going to catcall, like, their process of, like, I don't know. I don't know if they're, if getting a lecture is going to make them think twice. I don't know if physical violence is going to make them think twice.
Mm-hmm.
Because as routine as it is for us to experience it, it's as routine for them to do it.
And I think, actually, like, the word that you said was productive, which I thought was an interesting choice, because I think, for me, I'm thinking less so productive and more so kind of, I guess, when the rubber meets the road is the only way I can think to phrase it. You know, we had another listener write in on Twitter that, you know, she was like, I'm often unsure in these situations. I don't know whether to fight fire with fire. I don't know kind of what's the most, again, productive thing to do. And for me, it's almost like if you're in the moment that this is happening on the street, I don't think there is, A, I don't think there is anything productive to do. And B, I don't even know if productive, like when you're being harassed, it's almost like, why do you have to make it productive
right.
at all?
Right.
But then it's also, so for at least what my thought process is, or my like kind of subconscious enactor is like, what is going to be the least, like the least threatening? Like what's going to be, you know, and that doesn't always serve me well, but it also, in some ways I've been grateful in the past that I'm like, well, I'm really glad I let that de-escalate, even though now I'm going to go cry about it.
Right. And it's also really hard.
Yes.
Two.
Yes. Oh, I freeze. I don't know about you, but like I can't like spit back a thing. Like I never
have. Recently
one.
I've been better.
But you know, I also like that's the other thing is on the flip side of that, we had a bunch of listeners write in and say that they've stopped doing anything at all. Mm-hmm. Or they feel like they, you know, somebody said like I just had to stop because there are too many things that I'm seeing in the news about, you know, women getting killed and like really like physically beaten for things like responding. Or even just saying no. And you know, somebody else was talking about they were with their girlfriend. So it was these two girls who kissed, like, at a bar, and somebody from another bar saw them outside and, like, went to take a photo of them and was, like, yelling about it and, like, really fetishizing them. And she was like, all I could think to say was, like, go fuck yourself. And I wish I'd said something better than that. And my thought is, like, oh, my God, you managed to get that out of your mouth?
Right.
Like, normally I just go, huh? Like, it's so difficult to respond in the moment, you know? Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, is I think that something that's really empowering to me and has been about feminism is that I talked about having difficulty just in my life as a sentimental and soft bitch person,
mm-hmm.
is processing anger and experiencing anger. Mm-hmm. And so I love hearing stories about, like, something that I love so much about feminism is that there's this anger behind a lot of things.
Yeah.
I love that's an outlet. Mm-hmm. For a lot of women to express their anger, and that a lot of rebellion and resistance is fueled by it. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about that. One of our followers who messaged us about it, about keeping themselves safe, talked about, you know, it's important to keep in mind that it can be really dangerous when we're stomping the patriarchy, which I like that phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's also like, it's a thing you have to weigh the scales.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the phrase? No, that's the phrase.
No, that weigh the scales, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I think also
to weigh our options, you know? It's like, what, like,
mm-hmm.
what's...
Mm-hmm. And also we don't have to pit... Like, it's so important for me and myself to not pit anger against softness. Like, mm-hmm. you can be angry and soft. Those two things can exist in a single person. But, you know, I wish that we weren't so constrained by the world that we live in, but we do.
Right. And I, yeah, know? And I also, I mean... And so I think that... reaching out to other people who all have experienced this, because we all have, can be something that's really comforting for me.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think it's also important to not fill those relationships with just divulging and reprocessing all the time over and over and over again. Because if we all constantly brought the violence we experienced to our relationships, those precious relationships where we understand those experiences, we understand each other, and we share that mm-hmm. that experience of walking through the world in some ways, and in some ways we don't. Because as we said before, these experiences depend on identity and context.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, like, I want to leave room in those relationships for having those moments of joy and carelessness that we talked about earlier that are so often interrupted by harassment.
Yeah.
And I think that, yes. like, that we are so powerful and so apt at healing each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to, like, sometimes you just have to move through it and move past it and let it roll off your back
mm-hmm.
so that those relationships can be maintained as spaces of joy.
Mm-hmm. That was A, beautiful, and B, a little bit of lesbian melancholy, I feel like, just to bring it back to that term. The idea that, like, you know, it's gonna be shit forever, so
it's true.
Enjoy your relationships and write in your diary, you know, like, if you're okay with it, I would love to move into some funny and or practical ways yes. that we have responded.
I have several now, and I'm fabulous. Excited about them.
So mine is actually starts with me was, this is actually, like, not sexual in nature at all. It was just ridiculous. My sister and my dad and my brother-in-law and I were at a Phillies Giants game. We were in San Francisco, so we were rooting for the Phillies away. And obviously wearing Phillies jerseys. And we were down by, like, 8. And it was, like, the bottom of the 9th. So obviously we left. And we were leaving our seats. And this woman is, like, oh, my God. She's sitting
probably there, plastered.
I'm definitely plastered. She's, like, wearing her Giants clothes. And she screams. She's, like, maybe 10 feet from us. Screams, you fucking losers! Losers! And I just, like, again, the kindergartner teacher in me came out. I just looked at her and I went, excuse me, you are a grown woman. You are a grown woman. I just walked away and was like, what just happened?
It's an amazing response. I love the story. I asked Maggie to tell it. I think it's just so funny because it's like, listen, I'm not even going to engage with you because you are acting like a child.
This is ridiculous. And I don't want to be ageist, but also, like, you know that, like, you have a certain amount of accountability that you should be held to as an adult.
Right. What are you doing?
Pull it together.
Pull it together. Yeah. It's so funny because you are just mirroring the behavior. You're just calling it what it is.
Right. Exactly. You
know? Like, if you're going to act like a child, I'm going to act like I'm your mother.
It reminds me, I do have a second one that I said I would tell, which is in the bathroom. So I work at a geriatric hospital and we share the bathroom with a ton of different people, different staff members, sometimes residents of the hospital. So it's fun. We definitely run into the same people in the bathroom sometimes, but it's often a variety. And bathrooms can often be fun for me.
Fun.
And I've like had women do like ridiculous shit in the bathroom before about being like terrified that I was a man. But this one, most recently, this woman walks in, she opens, I'm at the sink and like I'm like about to turn on the faucet and she opens the door and she like gasps and she like sticks her head back out and like looks at the sign on the door and then like looks in and looks at me and she goes, oh, and she shuts the door and she starts walking to the stall and she goes, I just thought, and I went, I know what you thought. And then just like kept washing my hands. Like,
oh, it's I know so exactly what good. Happened. Oh, I know what you thought. So amazing.
Like, honey, you think you beat me to this one?
Right. Like, oh, what did you think? I have no idea what you could have possibly thought.
Also, just for starters, you think I didn't get up and put this on in the morning? You think it's, I just like walked into this by accident? Yeah. The fuck?
Also, like, I'm washing my hands. Clearly, I'm leaving.
Right.
Just like take your shit in silence and leave me alone. I want to share, a tactic that I have recently adopted, my crush uses this tactic. When men look at her on the street, she just looks at them and makes a fart noise. They'll look at her, she just goes, when we're walking together, just, and it's a comical cartoon fart noise. It's not subtle in any way, shape, or form. She wants them to know she's making a fart noise at them.
Right.
This is what I think of you. And it's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And she and I were talking actually about catcalling and dealing with street harassment because she is a beautiful woman. And,
You're a smitten kitten.
I'm a little bit smitten. And I was, as I was saying before, like, I feel like I get catcalled a lot when I'm with someone that I'm dating. Mm-hmm. And so it's been happening kind of frequently with her. I also go out to dinner more when I'm dating someone. I'm like, right. I'm in public and not just like in my bed watching Netflix.
Particularly in the evening.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were chatting about this the other day and she was just like, you know, I think for me, what I like to do is just make it as uncomfortable an experience as possible for them. She's like, I just want to make them regret it. And that's not to say like I antagonize them. I make it a ridiculous scenario. Like, she's like, I just make it funny because if they think that I don't take it seriously, mm-hmm. that's how you win.
Right.
You don't win by making them angry because men are always angry.
It's also really disarming to right. say something and, like, think you're on your swag game and then have someone go, pfft.
Yeah, exactly. So, she's very quick-witted, too. But the other day we were, we were driving.
It's amazing.
And I'm driving the car, she's in the passenger seat, and a guy in his car next to us is like driving alongside and starts like, I can feel him looking at me. So I look and he's like smiling or whatever. And I like glance at him and I'm like, okay, I'm driving a car though.
Right.
You are too. Please drive your car. And we're about to veer right on at a fork and he's like going straight. And he, of course he is. And he like starts yelling to us and he's like, where are you going? And I'm like, what? And he's like, where are you going? And my crush yells, I gotta poop real bad. And he's like, what? She's like, I really gotta poop. And he's like, where are you going? And he's like smiling and shit. And I don't know that he can even totally hear her, but I am dying laughing at this point. So he clearly is starting to feel a little uncomfortable because I'm just fucking laughing at him.
Right.
And she yells, you wanna know how much toilet paper I'm gonna use? A lot. But this dude was like grossed out and so uncomfortable. And it was just funny. And it made the situation funny for us, too. Mm-hmm. We were laughing about it. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've been yelling, I gotta poop real bad. Like, just, it's an inside joke now.
Right.
You know, which is a great thing about...
Which is probably, like, really cute in restaurants and...
when yeah. we're yelling, I wanna poop real bad. But I think that that's kind of a new tactic that I have adopted, is just, like, make it ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, when a guy's like, how you doing? Like, how you doing today? Oh, dude, I got really bad cramps. I think I'm about to have diarrhea. Like, do you have some Imodium? Like, what do you got? Like, you got a Pepto? Just, like, especially poop humor because it's mm-hmm. so infantile, which is how they're behaving. Mm-hmm. And also men believe that women don't poop or whatever.
Right. Love it.
Just, like, here I am, bowel movements.
Also, like, diarrhea is a visceral word for people.
Diarrhea like, isn't... practically an onomatopoeia.
Wait, the what's other... the... Oh, no, sorry, go ahead.
No.
Go ahead. Was just going to say, what is the... what's the one that you did... There's, like, another one that you do on your own, which is, like, kind of physically intimidating, but it's, like, not, yes. like...
So, I was doing this in the fall. I was taking the train a lot in the fall because I was dating someone who lived in Cambridge, and so I had to take the train a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I used to wear rubber bands, and when a dude would catcall me, I would either shoot it at them, or I would pretend to shoot it at them. And, I mean, I would just, like, carelessly, like, I wasn't really aiming, and I wasn't right. trying to hit them. The point was not to hit them.
Yes.
Actually. Like, maybe hit their feet.
Right.
But shooting it at them was just really disarming. It, like, because mm-hmm. if someone suddenly shoots something at you, you're freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also silly. It's childlike.
Right. It's, like, in a classroom.
It's, like, know, disarms like... the situation. And I never hit anybody with it, and yeah. I, like...
Not trying to do that.
And it never escalated a situation. Like, they always just like, what the fuck? And then I was gone.
Right.
So that worked. Oh, also, another tactic that I have used a couple of times. One time I was walking, and this guy was in his car and was catcalling me from his car. And he was like, oh, you're so beautiful. And I just went, I know. And I just kept walking. And I think that can get a little hairy sometimes, because... Dudes love to insult you when you reject them.
Right.
So, like, oh, you conceited bitch or whatever.
Right.
But it actually, I've done it a few times and it hasn't happened. Usually it just yeah. confuses them because those words and the tone sounds like you might be interested in what they're trying to sell you.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time they really even understand that you're kind of making fun of them, don't give a fuck about them, not mm-hmm. interested, you're already walking, like, you've already kind of walked away.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I just say it in passing. Oh, you're sexy, blah, blah, blah. I know. And you just keep walking.
It's also really good because it responds to it as if it were a legitimate date request or like a legitimate, like right. kind of like actual show of flattery, which it's like 9 times out of 10, not really supposed to be. Like mm-hmm. it's mostly just supposed to be like authoritative. And so for you to say like, oh, I know, is like, wait, not only did you respond to it seriously, you also were like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like,
so good. It's so good.
So good.
Yeah.
Mm. Do you have any final thoughts on catcalling or sexual harassment?
Yeah. They suck.
Done.
No, I think that this is something that I think a lot of, as we've said, I think a lot of media sources that talk about gender and sexuality and womanhood and feminism have yeah. talked about this because it's a huge issue and it affects people every day and it can be really scary or it can be a nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important to consider the variability in people's experiences
mm-hmm.
And that for the same person, that experience is different every day.
Yes.
And so I think that we've listed some tactics that are funny, and I think what's important about the tactics that I've listed is that they help me feel better about the situation,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what exactly they do to de-escalate or whatever. Like, the most important thing is that they make me okay mm-hmm. with dealing with it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I give a shit about, is being safe and being emotionally settled.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, I think, like, I also want to say that we had so many people reach out to us about this topic, and if you want to share and continue to share your stories with us, like, we're so grateful to the people who send in to us, and it's, like, so powerful to share these kind of stories. And if you want to talk more about this stuff privately, if you want support or just need to chat,
mm-hmm.
we are totally available for that. And I think that there's going to be more questions, there's going to be more frustrations and everything like that
yeah.
as far as this topic goes. But my advice is to just make some fart noises. At the end of the day. And be safe.
Yeah, definitely.
Take care of yourself.
Definitely. And I think to kind of go off your final point, I would say that mine is, as you said, the variability to which people receive harassment and what it looks like is big, and also how people are able to respond to it and what that does to their safety. Like
mm-hmm.
the kind of way that a certain response is received if a person who's been harassed looks like X or Y or Z,
mm-hmm.
particularly around race and like, how Black women are targeted for emoting ever mm-hmm. and around trans women as well. And so, you know, again, I think that it's just a serious shit topic. It fucking sucks,
mm-hmm.
but you know, this is bleak, but when I was little, I remember I said to my mom, I don't remember if I actually had anything to do with a predatory man or just like was a shitty situation, but I came home from something that lasted forever and I was miserable and texting my mom during it, like, you have to pick me up. Oh my God, I'm going to die. And I came home and she was like, so what's up? And I was like, well, every bad experience just makes great raw material for a story later. So,
wow, it's true. Or a podcast episode.
Or a podcast episode.
Okay, so we got a lot of great responses to our book episode, and we didn't want to let it die.
Let it stay alive.
For our final segment, we wanted to check in about our summer reading lists, and...
Yeah, haven't talked about it since first season.
Yeah, so. Mine's kind of like a year-long reading list, but yeah, we want to touch base about what we're reading and just give an update and talk about what's new with that. I did get a request from one of our followers to post screenshots of my reading list on Goodreads, which I will be doing
imminently
when we post this episode.
Yes.
So, but this week we're just going to talk about what we're reading this week, how we're feeling about it. We love gay books.
Yeah.
Maggie, do you want to start us off? What are you reading right now?
I will. So I actually, what I'm reading right now, we will discuss in significantly more detail later, particularly because I'm still in the middle of it. But I am reading Andrea Lawler's Paul Takes the Form of a Mortal Girl. And I was late to this fest. Like, so Andrea Lawler is a Mount Holyoke professor and they're amazing.
Amazing.
I never even had them. And like, this is just the word around town.
I actually never had them as a professor either. Mm-hmm. I just babysat their kid and... like chatted with them a lot about poetry.
It's just really awesome to see really cool queer people doing queer shit in front of you as like a role model. And so this novel that they wrote is amazing. And if you are interested, first off, if you went to Mount Holyoke or even like anywhere in the Pioneer Valley and you are interested in hearing the voice come through of that kind of like humor that so many of the professors use, particularly like anybody in gender studies, women's studies, queer studies at all, highly recommend reading. I've loved it. I've been like, oh my God, yes. Like at first I was like, wow, like their voice is so much like my friends. And I was like, no, they taught my friends and I how to speak. Okay, cool.
So, our humor is influenced by them.
100%.
Being a professor.
So, but it's really great. And it really digs into some fun references to like 90s queer culture. And it's like scratching a whole bunch of super fun queer itches that I am
amazing.
Like, yes.
Is it a novel in verse? Is it poetry or is
no,
it?
No, it's not. It's prose, which cool. is, but it takes a really interesting style. There's some definite jumping around of even like working in things like fairy tale. So
amazing.
Into it. And before that, I actually was like not reading anything. I was just rereading Dykes to Watch Out For, the comic compilation strips from Alison Bechdel. So I was happy to have something new. What are you reading?
I'm actually reading Alison Bechdel. I'm still reading Are You My Mother? This semester has been a little bit busy for me. So I'm reading Are You My Mother, which Maggie lent me. And I'm more than halfway through it at this point. And it's amazing. It's really interesting in comparison to Fun Home to see this other part of it. And to see, it's like when you finish a book and you're like, no, I didn't want to like have to leave this world. And to kind of be able to go back into it. But the other book exists too. It's like the ripple effects of it is just so fascinating to see. But an interesting thing is, so obviously reading it and being a queer woman myself, like, and having parents.
Right.
It's like, it brings up a lot of stuff about your own personal relationship with your coming out and your parents' reaction and your relationship with them and how that all changes over years. So an interesting thing, I recently was diagnosed with ADHD, actually. Which is funny because I'm laughing because the psychologist used the phrase beyond the shadow of a doubt. So there's that. But the reason I bring it up, I had told my mom like, oh, I went and got evaluated and whatever, they said I have ADHD. And my mom felt so bad. She was like, oh my God, like, how did we not catch this? Blah, blah. I went to Catholic school. So there was no social worker at the school. There's no psychologist. There's no one to refer a kid to if they think that they may need some more assistance, something like that. So I was like, Mom, what? Like, why would you feel bad? You know, I'm fine. I'm like in nursing school. Like, I'm really, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But I remember I made a joke and I was like, I had been reading that day. I'd been reading Fun Home, or I'd been reading Are You My Mother? And so I'd been thinking a lot about my relationship with my mom and you know, there's like faults and like it's complicated. And I love my mom so much. This weekend we're going to see Blondie. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for like we're having a little girls trip. Mm-hmm. But she was like, I feel so bad. Like I didn't like notice anything and help you or whatever. And I said, Mom, you sent a lesbian to Catholic school. I think that's like a bigger issue here. And she was like, oh, you're right. And it was really funny. But I think I like, it's kind of brought a little bit of perspective to my relationship with my parents, which has been really cool. Mm-hmm. Because the first book is obviously like so startling about the relationships with Allison's parents. And so this one, it kind of feels like it's a little bit more nuanced and a little bit subtler in the ways that it, like it's more relatable to me.
Yes.
Because I'm like, oh yeah, this is like the gray complicated areas of navigating being a queer adult with a parent.
I really liked Are You My Mother, particularly in comparison to Fun Home, because it was the first example I'd ever seen, particularly from a queer writer, about what it looked like to have relationships with family members and not fill the classic trope of kid is disowned and runs away, or like only has queer family and we never learn about the blood family. Because while as common as that is, I also think that this does speak to experiences that people have, like having to deal also with the aftermath of having an kind of abusive person in your family die.
Right.
Like Allison's father did. And so, I fucking loved it.
Yeah. There's something so special about a book that, like you're saying, like it doesn't fit either extreme stereotype. It's not like, oh, my parents didn't give a shit at all and totally welcomed me with open arms and there was never any complication. But it's also not, I completely emancipated and never speak to them, you know? And I think, because even in situations where people are like, oh yeah, my parents like totally accepted me with open arms, your parents are never going to be queer people if they are not queer people.
Right.
And so even when they're as loving as they possibly could be, there's going to be disconnect.
Right.
And that can be really painful growing up. Mm-hmm. Growing up as in growing up, you know, I'm not speaking about adolescence. I'm speaking about forever, your entire life.
Right. And I think that there's so much that people, like, there's so much more discussion. Like, we've had the trope of, like, daughters and mothers being best friends forever in books and movies. And we've moved with things like Lady Bird into the complicated things that daughters will have with their mothers. But I think I don't know of any other examples of queer and particularly, like, Alison Bechdel's obviously gender nonconforming, but I think even just in general, the idea of like queerness being like very publicly visible or I don't know, like in any way gender variant, like we don't get examples of those people with their mothers and like how that can affect relationships and how strong relationships can be. Like, I love how much they talk on the phone. Mm-hmm. I love how much she how her mother goes into the like mundane details of her day. There's something that is like, to me, I'm like, yeah, that is a shared aspect of womanhood that my mother and I have together, you know? So if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. That's it. Bye.
All right. That is our episode. Thank you guys for listening. Next week, we're going to be talking about eating and food, again, continuing in our body series. So if you have kind of immediate reactions to those two words, eating and food, and you have things that you want us to talk about on the air, definitely DM us on Twitter, Instagram. Just let us know. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for sending in your comments about catcalling. We know that this is a pretty serious subject, and so we really appreciate your willingness to open up to us and let us share some of your experiences on the air. So awesome. Stay hydrated.